pillar and could tell me anything of his castle. Both he and his wife crossed themselves and simply refused to speak further. Just before I was leaving, the landlady came up to my room and said, in a very hysterical way, "Must you go?" When I told her that I must, and that I was engaged on important business, she said, "It is the eve of St. George's Day. Do you not know that tonight, when the clock strikes midnight, all the evil things in the world will have full sway? Do you know where you are going?" Finally, she went down on her knees and implored me not to go, at least to wait a day or two before starting. I said, as gravely as I could, that I thanked her, but my duty was imperative. She then rose, and taking a crucifix from her neck, offered it to me. It seemed ungracious to refuse. She saw the doubt in my face, for she put the rosary round my neck, and said, "For your mother's sake," and went out of the room. The 5th of May. I got on the coach and we started. I soon lost recollection of ghostly fears and the beauty of the scene as we drove along. Beyond the green swelling hills rose mighty slopes of forest up to the lofty steeps of the Carpathians. When it grew dark, there seemed to be some excitement amongst the passengers, and they kept speaking to the driver as though urging him to further speed. Then the mountains seemed to come nearer to us on each side. We were entering on the Borgo Pass. At last we saw the pass opening out onto the eastern side. I was looking out for the conveyance which was to take me to the Count. The passengers drew back with a sigh of gladness. The driver, looking at his watch, said to the others something I could hardly hear. I thought it was an hour less than the time. And then turning to me, he said, "There is no carriage here. The heir is not expected after all. He will now come on to Bukovina, and return tomorrow or the next day." Whilst he was speaking, the horses began to neigh and snort. Then, amongst a chorus of screams from the peasants and a universal crossing of themselves, a calèche with four horses drove up. The driver was a tall man with a long brown beard. I could only see the gleam of a pair of very bright eyes, which seemed red in the lamplight. He said, "You are early tonight, my friend." The man replied, "The English heir was in a hurry." The stranger replied, "That is why you wish him to go on to Bukovina? You cannot deceive me, I know too much. Give me the heir's luggage." My bags were put in the calèche. Then I descended from the side of the coach. The driver shook his reins, the horses turned, and we swept into the darkness of the pass. I felt a strange chill, and a lonely feeling came over me. But a cloak was thrown over my shoulders, and a rug across my lap. "My master, the Count, bade me to take care of you." The carriage went at a hard pace, straight along. Then a dog began to howl somewhere, a long, agonized wailing. The sound was taken up by another dog, and then another. The first howl, the horses began to strain and rear, but the driver spoke to them, and they quieted down, and then, far off, in the distance, began a louder and sharper howling, that of wolves. The time seemed interminable as we swept on our way. We kept on ascending. I became conscious of the fact that the driver was in the act of pulling up the horses in a courtyard of a vast ruined castle, from whose tall black windows came no ray of light, and whose broken battlements showed a jagged line against the moonlit sky. I must have been asleep, for certainly if I had been fully awake, I must have noticed the approach of such a remarkable place. The driver jumped down and held out his hand to assist me to alight. Then he took out my traps and placed them on the ground, as I stood close to a great door. The driver jumped again into his seat and shook the reins. The horses started forward and disappeared down one of the dark openings. I stood in silence where I was, for I did not know what to do. Of bell or knocker there was no sign. I felt doubts and fears crowding upon me. Was this a customary incident in the life of a solicitor sent out to explain the purchase of a London estate to a foreigner? All I could do now was to be patient. Just as I had come to this, I heard a heavy step approaching behind the great door. A key was turned, and the great door swung back.